When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to spend the day talking about our day in Erie, Pennsylvania over the weekend as we walked the picket line and went to the union hall of the UE workers who are on strike at Wabtec. And look, this is one of those stories of a union looking at the company and going, we can help you. We can help you do better. We can help you create better jobs for the community. We can help you create better jobs for our workers. This could be the place that is the heart of the American dream. We can help. And we're going to. This is the great part. This is an important story. Because these workers, yeah, they're asking for a little bit more money in their paychecks. Because this is a wildly profitable company. And they should be sharing it. Because the workers earn it. But this is also about going, look, the future of work in this country, you know, we're moving towards a cleaner, greener economy. The work should be done in the U.S. They say we want it done in this plant, which is one of the most profitable in their system, one of the top performers in their system. They're going, look, you should be making it here. And it's not just the workers pushing for this, it's the community. Because what the community understands is, when those workers do better, when they've got a little bit of disposable money in their pocket, that money goes through the local economy. And the thing is when we took our trip, and I talked about this on our radio program that, yesterday, that money that goes into those workers' pocket, that disposable income, ends up in the local economy. It ends up reverberating on Main Street. Whereas Wabtec wants to take that money out of Main Street, give it to Wall Street, wants to put it in their pockets, in the pockets of the investors, the workers are going, hey, we're the ones who create this. We're the ones who do the hard work in the heat of the summer, in the cold of the winter. We're the ones who, during the pandemic, showed up and busted our behinds to make you wild profits. It's now time to pony up. Not just for us, but for the community, and the community gets it. So for me, this is the model going forward of communities that used to be. Because look, as we were driving around Erie and we ended up going to Niagara Falls, man, that area just decimated with closed down factories and Main Street that's looking a little ragged and rough. But it's no different than the places we went to on our Working Class Heroes tour. the hollowing out of America started with manufacturing leaving. And what we've learned over this, 40-50 year experiment of neoliberalism and supply side voodoo Reaganomics is you got to be able to take raw materials and turn it into value added products as the center of your economy, as what brings money in. So for me today on the program, again, we're going to be spending a lot of time focused on these workers, going to tell the stories of the people who were there and hopefully get people activated in their local communities to go, you know what, we can do better. We want to do better. We got to do better. We need public policy to help. But more importantly, we need to adopt a striker. Wherever there's a strike, you should be walking the picket line with them. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in Erie at UE Hall, Local 506, as we're covering the strike that's going on. And look, you know, when we go to these things, I like getting a wide array of people who have decided that they're going to spend a little time walking the picket line. Because as I've said before, everyone should be adopting a striker. I've been saying this for years. Go out there, walk next to them on the picket line, listen to what they've got to say, hear why they're out there. Don't listen to the nonsense that you hear in the media or somebody told you. Get out there and walk the line with them. Buy a box of donuts, a pizza, a bottle of water. Come by and walk with a striker. And I've got one of them here with me. Brian Pietrek is a Wabtec heavy equipment operator. He's also involved in the local. He's the treasurer and the independent legislative action committee chair. Brian, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me. Welcome to Erie.
Why are we here?
Well, we're up with a contentious debate and contract with this company who really feels that that our members are like numbers on a spreadsheet. That's how we all feel. 4 years of hell was also 4 years of contract interpretation from 2019. And we knew where we were going in, the direction we were going in after the contract was ratified, that it was going to be a rough 4 years. And it was rougher than anybody can imagine. When GE went out, we wanted a change because we were sick of GE's politics and how they were treating the union. But this company is 10 times worse than GE. They are just all about the money. It's not a two-way street program whatsoever. It's Wall Street focused. The shareholders come first, and I think that's their policy. We are treated like numbers. Even they turn the heat off on us in the winter. For COVID, there was no thank yous. Get back to work while we sit at home, play on our computers, and we watch what you do from there. On top of taking away our vacation as of late, having us they're going to schedule our vacations for us. They took a six-week vacation away for people with 30 years of service or more. The benefits now that they're proposing with this contract, which is one of the main reasons why we're out on the picket lines today, is that they have every right to diminish our health care benefits and without any capping of the prices. And our demographics in the shop with legacy workers, meaning they make full rate, is the average age is 58 years old. It's very important. With the new hires, it drops down to 53, so there is a younger demographic coming in. However, benefits are very important across the board for everybody, and especially if the price goes up, and you know damn well it will, it rattled some nerves. And I think the people that were on the fence that were undecided on how to vote came to the auditorium right down the road here during the vote to listen to what our leadership had to say about the sandwich we're about to eat. And how much jelly is it enough for you to swallow? And a lot of people said, that's not enough jelly. And that's exactly why we did the right thing by hitting the bricks. We're telling the company it's not good enough. Now, you also look at MarketWatch.com. As of, I think last Saturday I saw it. Last Saturday I saw Wabtec has a metric up there called revenue per employee. So that's how much money they make off that employee each year. And it's up to $320,000. That's no joke. $320,000 they make off the backs of everybody, not just the laborers, but the business folks as well that work for that company. We're fighting for a progression tier. This is number two on top of the benefits. We want that 10-year progression decreased. They don't want to budge on that. You're making $320,000 a year on that individual, and you can't give them a nickel raise.
No. No, that's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Even just to narrow it down, because everybody, including myself, was on a progression tier at one point or another. Mine was only a year and a half. It was 18 months. Some of the guys that started in the 80s were 5 years. Okay, we get the progression tier. We understand that you want to make full rate. Okay, there's a break-in period before you start actually making, you know,
yeah, but 10 years?
10 years, though? Get out of here. And, you know, originally our proposal was zero. That was our starting point because we felt that there should be no second tier. It's not a permanent two-tier wage, though. It's a progression tier. So they can have the right to go to legacy, but the problem with this company is you're going to get laid off. I've been laid off for 2.5 years, so if you have 3 years in, you're going to come back in 3 years at that rate that you left out on. And then what if you get laid off again? Like I said, it would take you 20 years maybe to get to that legacy weight.
Wow.
Think about that. And
see, it was always progression always started your anniversary date. The calendars, not working years.
Right. Yeah, they're not respecting that.
Wow.
Now think about this too. Now say if you're 20-something years old and you're finally, you know, up in your 40s, you're making legacy wages, you don't have that farther to go to retirement. You know, and especially with what they were going to give us for wage increases as legacy workers, none of us are complaining about that. But the media seems to be picking up on why are you guys, you know, yelling about the wage increases. You guys are getting 8.5% plus two lump sums over 4 years. We're not. We're complaining about the progression. You're not giving any sort of leeway here to get these guys up to par with legacy workers. That's not fair. We're not going to work with somebody who's going to be making $10 to $15 an hour less than us. I'm sorry. What if that was your kid? That's the thing. They do not have any empathy. It's all about dollars and cents. Now, to talk about that, I'm going to go off of a tangent here. This is a very nepotistic management that we have. It's almost, a lot of people call it incestuous because there is four particular family trees that do control this plant that came from GE. So it's the same boss, or the new boss, the same as the old boss.
Yeah.
And now their kids are there. Now you have third or fourth, even fifth generation spawn running the show over there. Now, we also all have that statistic where Scott calls it the third generation syndrome when the grandkid starts running the business and ends up tanking. Well, this is why, because they're never told to get their hands dirty, number one. They probably don't even know how to turn a bolt the right way to tighten it. Number two, number three.
But they're in charge.
But they're in charge. And it's from these institutions that the corporations also own, that they pay a lot of money into, that teach them the do's and don'ts of how to run a business. Now, unfortunately, it's almost nihilistic. That's how we feel, especially after COVID. When Delta hit, I was terrified because my girlfriend at the time was going through a cancer battle. And I was trying to be safe as can be. We were all, for the most part, in our work area, we all got along. We all understood, no matter what the political divide was, we'd respect each other, whether you wanted to wear the mask or not. But the company wasn't reinforcing anything. When Delta came in and you saw all your coworkers getting sick, especially in the smaller rooms where they're building sensitive equipment and panels, everybody on each shift got it. There are people upstairs, two guys in particular, that got it on the same day, and they died pretty close to the same days. I mean, we knew these people. Company didn't care. Guess what? We're going to bring in somebody
next.
Else. Yeah. Next. That's exactly it. Now, imagine how horrific that is. Like, I have PTSD a little bit from that, especially being at the time I was a union steward and having to deal with the management also being inconsistent on running the show that they were having with this COVID because they didn't want to get into it because they didn't know anything about it. They can give two hoots about it. And then what do? They shut the heat off. Great. So we can't stay warm. We're actually going to be more subject to get sick now. Wonderful. Thank you. Just to save $60,000. But they're making $320,000 off of me that year.
Well, they did have to, you know, buy back, what, was that a half, more than a half a billion dollars?
Well, the original statistic I got was $750 million, and I think Bernie was said 530. I think that was the number on his latest tweet. I think that was over the last weekend. But still, you're giving it to Wall Street and nobody on the floor?
And this is one of those things that is one of my pet peeves, the idea that, you know, we're going to buy back our stocks. This tells me that you don't think there's any productive use for that money. You can't invest in new equipment. You can't invest in new facilities. You can't invest in research and development. And you sure as aren't willing to invest in your workers. You're just going to stick it in your pocket. And it is all about the greed. That's, yep, to me, that's the message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not even, I don't even call it corporate greed. It's boardroom greed. The corporation's not doing it. It's the people who's running the board that are doing these, making these calls. And it's unfortunate because the package that we were looking at total originally, that was our starting point. Our original package was estimated to be $150 million with 1,400 people over 4 years. That's how it would have benefited. And, you know, they said, that's way too much. That's way too much. Now they're saying it was $39 million, that this is the final best offer. However, if you look at their top CEOs, the top 11 of them made $160 million in 4 years' time. You can't have it all. And I think that's the point. I think back in 2019, we made the big FU to Wabtec on their first day because they wanted $17 an hour out of everybody. 3 weeks maximum vacation. No, we are a tier one manufacturing society. Sorry. We are a tier one manufacturing facility that makes super heavy things, and people can get hurt real quick. Those locomotives that I work with out in the yard that I tow with a Bobcat, they are 498,000 pounds. A lot can go wrong in a small amount of time if you're in the wrong place and time.
I don't want to drop that on my foot.
And this is another thing that's an issue. It's the training. We have new management here because the old squad's kind of going up the corporate ladder, so they're getting this new influx of people who've never really worked a day in manufacturing in their lives. And you can tell because they think that these new hires, because they're having a hard time bringing in folks who are skilled in welding, electronics, electricians, testers, even assemblers, because they're making better money in their shops to begin with. We're getting folks that don't have much manufacturing experience, little to none, and they're coming in here, and the management's telling them, you're trained after 2 weeks. A monkey can do this. I've heard my own boss say that, and I was ready to freaking knock him out, but that's another story.
But yeah, however, but maybe a monkey can, but you can't.
You can't, man, but these people are getting hurt. They're getting hurt real bad. We had a guy who had a stator lid fall on him because the boss figured he was trained, told him to do it. He didn't disobey. He pulled it out of an oven, 400 degrees, and this 400-pound part landed on his femur and crushed it. Think about that. And on top of the weight, it was burning.
Oh.
Now, we also had a kid who was 2 weeks on the job. He was using rotating equipment, wearing gloves, and he was using a torque wrench. And it grabbed and spun a hold of his thumb and ripped it right off. When they picked up the glove, they had the thumb inside, but the string was hanging out. They thought it was a sleeve. It was a tendon from his muscle all the way up to his elbow. This is a new kid. 20 years old. His last job was working at a convenience store. He had no business having those gloves on, but the manager saw it and said, it's okay, it's fine, do it. Now, the third thing, so those are the big two. The benefits of why we hit the bricks, the progression tier, and three is accountability. The right to strike over our grievances is number one in my book because they have no accountability whatsoever, and they weren't afraid to show it these past few weeks before we actually voted to go out. Meaning, they brought in scabs to work side by side with us because they said we were refusing to work the overtime. And the contract, it says they can do that. However, they weren't asking everybody to work the overtime. They were just bringing these people in. Then they expect us to train them. No. But you know, we file a board charge and stuff, but they don't care. They want to send everything to arbitration like usual. I think their ultimate goal is to bankrupt this union. And being as the financial secretary / treasurer, I'm frightened about that.
Yeah, arbitrations are not cheap.
Yeah, and I think we're averaging, from what I've tabulated, it's about 9,000 each case. We have 68 in the queue. When it was GE, at the most in any given year was at least three, or at the most three, I'm sorry. At the most was three arbitrations in the queue. We have 68. So it shows you that they don't care anything about that contract. And when we went to the originally proposed in negotiations that we want that right to strike, that lawyer for Jones Day, the union's or the
union
nation's
busting.
Largest union-busting law firm, said, read my lips, it ain't happening. But then President Scott here said, oh, it is happening, read my lips. So also we felt, too, during negotiations that the bargaining and good faith kind of went out the window when we wanted to press them again on this issue. And instead they said, well, if you want that, we want this. And they slid a letter over across the table saying, we want 275 of your indirect labor subcontracted out to a third party. Indirect labor meaning all your jitney drivers, your inventory, your inspectors, anything that is non-productive that doesn't make them money. They were basically saying, we want these people out. We're going to bring our own crew in at a way lesser price, with way lesser overhead. And how are you negotiating in good faith with a gun to your head?
Yeah.
That's exactly how I felt. When I was in that meeting, my jaw was down to my gut. My gut was down to my knees. How the hell are they supposed – how are you supposed to react to something like that on the fly?
No, they put that out there wanting you to strike.
Yeah.
So they've that's pushed it. You into the middle of this.
It feels like we got forced. But and that's why we're kind of going after the unemployment, because before you know it, all these scabs are showing up when we go back to work because we decided to let the membership vote on it. And we're like, what the heck? They didn't even send these guys home. And then we come to find out they were planning on us going on strike. They were shocked that they sent it to a membership vote, but they were we were stuck with all these scabs. That's why they brought them in there. We come to find that out later. It's like, you guys are terrible. Their PR, it's like you're hitting a hornet's nest with a bat. Membership is upset. And then took the vacation away because they forgot to schedule our own shutdown, which is in our contract. Like I said, no accountability, right? Hey, UR guy, you forgot to schedule the shutdown, you know, prior to April 1st. You gave it to us on April 1st. Well, what the company did was they let him go, but they said, well, we're going to schedule your vacations for you. That was a big oh hell no from the membership, even from the guys with no, next to nothing in service to the guys with 40 plus years there, and there are some in there. Like, how dare you? So I don't understand what they were trying to do, especially in that that time between where we went to the e-board decided to send it to the membership vote to when the membership actually voted on it. But I don't know exactly know what their plan was because they were scared. They felt uncomfortable for the first time because we were working without a contract. And the best thing to say is, good. How does it feel to work uncomfortably? We've been dealing with it for four freaking years.
Yeah.
We are sick of it. And I firmly believe, I mean, everybody has a right vote because everybody's situation is different. The circumstances are different for everybody. Nobody's vote is wrong. And I told that to the membership, too, because when I was explaining myself, explaining the last chance offer, I told them, you vote however you feel that you want to vote. There's no right answer. But how we come out of this, whatever that decision you guys decide to vote on, we have to stick together. Because that rage is going to turn into solidarity. And you can ask any one of these union busters that have been hired for the dark side. That's the only way you win contracts, is when that rage turns into solidarity, you go back to work. And that's what we're going to try to keep focus on. I think if this is a marathon of a lockout or however they're going to dub it, I feel it's a lockout just because of the way the negotiations went. I was there. I mean, it was just awful. I mean, but if it's a marathon or a sprint, I think in the marathon it's key right now that our leadership keeps everybody together, keeps everybody happy as much as we can. And that's why I'm here for. You know, that's why I've been busting my brains and what in kahunas off here for the past week because I want to make sure everything's, yep. You know, everybody's okay. You yep. know, it's all strictly volunteer, but I love doing this. I love helping people, and I feel like this is the place I need to be, you know.
Well,
and
good
I feel,
on you.
And I feel like anytime I'm out, you know, even at home, like, I was like, man, I should be going back there, and everybody's telling me here, no, take a break. You know, like, I know you want to try to do so much, but there's only so much time in a day, and I know you got to get going here too, but I can talk volumes about this place. It's sad, though.
But, you know, again, it shows why we are where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that there are good reasons to be where you are.
Yep.
Really didn't have a choice in this.
At all. I mean, nobody wants a strike.
Nope.
Put that, I mean, I want to make that very clear. Nobody wants a strike. But if you really feel that passionate about what kind of sandwich they're going to serve you, guess what? You do something about it, because if you don't do it now, you're going to not do it later. You're going to keep kicking that can down the road.
Yeah, and you're going to end up getting the short end of the stick.
Exactly.
But Brian, I appreciate the time. I wish you the best, and as this continues, I'd love to have you back to share some more, and especially on Victory Day.
You too, brother. I hope you're here for it.
Thanks so much, Brian.
All right, you
appreciate
too.
It, brother.
All right.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break back here from Erie, Pennsylvania. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Make sure you grab the podcast, or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. One of the things I love about visiting picket lines and talking to striking workers, not just their stories and the reason they got there, but all of the other people who come and march with them. The solidarity of the line. The idea of coming just to show support. And here in Erie, people from all over the place. I know the Teamsters sent their horsemen, their motorcycle club to come through. I know the IBWs had a bunch of people here. And today, some UAW folks have shown up from as far away as Lordstown, Ohio, to show support for the workers here. That's why I've asked Josh Ayers to come sit down with us. Josh is the bargaining committee chairman for UAW 1112 in Lordstown, Ohio. He has brought a bunch of folks here to come show the web tech striking workers a little bit of support. Josh, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you very much, Rick.
So, I guess first question, you know, what made you make this journey?
Well, we heard the UE... was on strike up here with the company, and we're like, well, we have the time to come up here and show some support, back them. At Altium Cells, you know, we're in a contract dispute with them, trying to form our first contract with the company, and it's been a rough couple months since we initiated the bargaining process on February 14th of 2023.
So, you know, the idea of solidarity, something core to what brought you here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, UE, UAW, USW, we're all in this together. We're all brothers and sisters.
Yeah, that old Knights of Labor frame, an injury to one, an injury to all. I like that. You know, what's been your experience here?
I mean, it looks like it's, you know, members are showing up, standing out, you know, solidarity, togetherness. You know, it's hot as hell outside, but everyone's staying hydrated and battling the heat. So yeah, I mean, I, you know, myself and the committee that came up, we were proud to participate. And heck, I like to be out on the line still, actually.
No, I'm with you, and I'm looking forward to going back. But you guys, you work for this Altium Cell. You guys, like you just said, you're beginning this process.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. What's going on?
Okay, so Lordstown Assembly Plant, which was a GM assembly plant, they shut the doors in 2019, and
it was heartbreaking.
It was devastating to the Mahoning Valley, Trumbull County, Columbiana, Tri-County area. People either had a couple choices. They could transfer to another plant, or they could voluntarily quit, or they could take a buyout. It displaced a lot of families. It caused a lot of heartbreak. I remember seeing videos of people standing outside the plant, crying, just sobbing. It was heartbreaking.
No, I remember that. Look, I grew up in Cleveland. That was a massive facility, employed thousands of people. I remember I worked for a trucking company in Cleveland at the time. We were in and out of there all the time. It was a huge driver for the area, and to see it you know, just destroyed is frustrating, angering, all of those things. And I remember, you know, former President Trump saying, "We're going to save this. Don't you worry. Don't move." Yeah. That didn't happen. And what came and replaced those jobs hasn't really helped all that much either, if I've got this right.
Right. So if I can give you a quick background. So I was employed at General Motors Lordstown Assembly Plant in 1997. I was hired full-time in 2000. I was summer help in 97, full-time in 2002. I took a relocation package to Fairfax, Kansas in 2008. I was trying to come back to Lordstown, and that's when the financial crisis happened, when the big three, you know, kind of two out of the three went bankruptcy, filed bankruptcy and restructuring. They offered me a buyout because I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to come back to Lordstown.
Right.
So I took the buyout, moved back home, and real quick, you know, a job at GM Lordstown, it was like the golden ticket, as I call it. It was like a very desirable job. You know, if you weren't a nurse, a doctor, a lawyer, that was the next gig.
Yeah.
That's where people were like breaking down doors to try to get into because of the weight. The wages were great. The healthcare was great. The profit sharing, you know, the discounts you got on General Motors vehicles. I mean, it was great living.
No, you busted your behind, but you made a good living.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, too, any safety issues inside the plant, not only did you have the company that would, you know, investigate and try to make things right, but you also had the UAW safety team. So I never went to work afraid that I was going to get injured or killed. I pretty much always felt safe walking to work. So fast forward a couple years, you know, GM closed the doors in 2019, and all of a sudden this you know, news release came out about this joint venture between General Motors and LG forming this company called Altium Cells. I'm like, you know, I moved back into town. Like, this could be my next golden ticket.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good job. Right. Local in that place that had the best wages ever.
Right.
I can see how you'd be excited about
right.
that.
Right. So got employed there, and it's not a golden ticket. I can promise you that. So wages, let's talk about wages real quick. So if you're in shipping and receiving, global supply chain, it's $15 an hour to start. If you're an operator on the floor, it's $16.50 an hour to start. And if you're a tech lead, you get a dollar more, it's $17.50 to start. After 6 months, you get a 50-cent raise. And another 6 months after that, it's 23 cents. And every 6 months after that, it's a 23 cents raise.
Can't afford that extra 2 cents to get you to the quarter?
I guess not, you know. But after 7 year, you know, time spent in the facility, you make just above $20 an hour. So 7 year, you know, buy-in into the company, investment in the company, and they only want to give you $20 an hour.
No, I don't know how you make a living on that. I don't know how you support a family on that. If those are the jobs that are going to replace those family-sustaining jobs of the auto industry, I don't know where we are as a society.
Right, right. I mean, these are the jobs of the future. I'm sorry to say this, but we're in trouble.
Yeah.
If this is the rate it's going at.
No, because, you know, you're right. We're told these are the next generation of jobs. This is the future, which is why I guess you're organizing, right? Which is why you're pursuing this. Because, you know, I've said before, you know, those UAW jobs, those assembly line jobs, those weren't great jobs. Those steel mill jobs, those weren't great jobs. That truck driving job that I've had for over 30 years wasn't a great job until they were union jobs.
Correct.
Until people fought to make them better, until people pursued contracts and went on strike like they're doing here in Erie. That's how we built the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. That is the only way. There's no benevolent corporation going to say, here, we're going to bestow these wonderful things upon you. It's people like you demanding we earn a better living. We demand it.
Correct. So I was hired in on March 7th of 2022. And within my first couple weeks of orientation class, I was already reaching out to the UAW along with some of my other new hire coworkers. And we're like, how soon can we organize? So the organizing process actually kicked off in June of 2022. And let's see, we we tried to do a car check. Of course, the company pushed back on the car check and said, you know, you're going to have to go through the NLRB. So in December of 2022, on December 7th and 8th, we had a vote at, inside the plant. And it was the total ass-kicking of the yes-no vote. 7-10 yes, 16 no's.
That is outstanding.
I was able to sit in on the votes, and they start counting votes around 11 o'clock at night on the 8th. And, I mean, I still get chills thinking about it because it was amazing just to hear every vote being counted one at a time. Yes, 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 yes. And I'll never forget that night. It was amazing because all the hard work with, you know, trying to organize, you know, they're called VOCs, Volunteer Organizing Committee. We're inside the plant every day talking to people, educating about why union support and why we need it. Do you think this company is going to give us fair, livable wages and great health care? And we had massive amounts of health and safety issues inside the plant. We had an explosion. We had a death inside the plant. It wasn't one of our members. It was one of the OEMs from Korea that passed away. He was unfortunately crushed due to a safety lockout violation. He later died about 3 months later after he got crushed in the hospital. You got people getting chemical burns. I mean, there's so many hazardous chemicals inside this facility. It's not like an assembly line where, you know, you might have a few hazardous chemicals, you know, like urethane or in the paint shop or whatnot. But, I mean, these things are highly caustic, cancerous. Some cause reproductive issues, cancer. And the problem is that OSHA is behind the eight ball because, like, these chemicals are kind of new to the United States.
And proprietary.
Yes, and proprietary, absolutely. So you got electrolyte. We have issues where people just inhale the fumes and they start getting dizzy, vomiting, passing out. It causes severe irritation, burns on the skin. You have to get a special treatment called Calginate. And basically, I wash your body part, the skin, for like 15 minutes and then put this Calginate on there because the electrolyte actually seeks calcium in the bone.
Yes. That sounds like a job I don't want to do.
For $16.50 an hour.
Yeah, that sounds like a job I would never do for $16.50 an hour. And this is why I think it's important for folks like you who are doing it, and good on you for doing it, because it is helping move us in a better direction. The new green economy is coming, but it should come with better wages, hours, and conditions. Sure. It should come with better opportunities. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Josh Ayers. Josh is bargaining committee chairman for the UAW 1112 local in Lordstown, Ohio. He's here in Erie to help support the web tech workers who are on strike. I want to go back to this where you are right now, though, because, you know, you won the election.
Yes.
You know, in the old days, you sit down, you bargain a contract. It gets done. And if it doesn't get done, you go on strike. Where are you guys now?
Well, we started bargaining February 14th of 2023. And we told the company up front that, hey, you know, if you want to start discussing wages, we're open to it. They heard us, but they didn't do anything about it. Bargaining has been kind of held up, and I'm going to tell you why, because of all the health and safety issues inside the plant. So we actually had to pause bargaining to deal with the health and safety issues inside the plant, And, you know, one of them was the explosion that happened in the notch and dry portion of the plant. In fact, now the joke is it's called notch and die.
That's not a joke.
Well, yeah.
There's nothing funny about that.
No, it's not.
But I know it's gallows humor.
Yes.
I get that because you're working in dangerous conditions, but nobody should have to do that.
No. And actually, after that happened, there was such fear in the employees working there. I mean, it was every day was a question like, am I safe? I mean, do I even want to work here anymore? You know, they're kind of waiting to see why the explosion happened. And then when the company came out to say why the explosion happened, they didn't trust the company. They still don't trust the company. No matter what they say, they don't trust the company.
And this is, again, another one of those reasons why every working person should have a union and someone standing behind them. Now, here's the weird part for me, because as I've said before on this program, we've got the most pro-union president in the history of, or at least in my lifetime. We've got a National Labor Relations Board with someone who I think is a rock star and doing fantastic work. How does this help get you to the next step? Is it that our laws are so badly broken that they're going to be able to drag this out? How do you see it playing?
So, unfortunately, when the IRA was developed and passed, there's no written laws in there to tell where the money's supposed to go. So that's the problem. These companies, be it LG, Samsung, SK, they're reaping the benefits of the taxpayer dollars, and of course the workers aren't seeing a dime of it.
Yeah. How profitable is Altum Cell?
Hard to say. I think they came out with something about a month or so ago and said last year was it $6.5
billion?
Billion,
let me stutter and stammer a little bit over the fact that they made $6.5 billion and they're paying you $16.50 to work in dangerous conditions. Let me chew on that for a second, because that sounds wrong.
I don't know. Like I said, I mean, I could be off of my numbers.
No, I mean, but they're a wild, but we see this across the board. I mean, I look at UPS right now. They made $13.9 billion, and they don't want to give a raise to people who made them that money. So the question I come back to is, how do we push this forward? How do we get them to do what they got to do?
So in May of this year, the committee and myself, we did go to Washington, D.C. to talk to some congressional members, some senators.
And you got a great one. Sherrod Brown is one of my favorite people. Fabulous person.
Yeah,
J.D. Vance, not so much.
Well, actually, the Senate was out on vacation for the holiday, and we did talk to their staffers. In fact, J.D. Vance's office, we did visit, and they're well aware of it. And it was surprising, but they sounded like they kind of wanted to get involved and help. We met with Sherrod Brown's staff as well. So I was able to testify in front of some of the congressional members, and I just gave a brief explanation of like my history at Lordstown, like you and I just discussed, transitioning it over to Altium Cells, and I just told them it's a race to the bottom, not the top. Again, yeah. As I told you, if these are the jobs of the future, we're in trouble. And not only that, with the taxpayer dollars, Altium's getting $1.2 billion a year in taxpayer funding. So here's the problem. So before the IRA even came in existence, GM and LG got together and said, let's create this company. You don't create a company if you're not going to make money, correct?
Absolutely.
So you got two multi-billion dollar companies forming a joint venture. Now, a couple years later, now they're getting taxpayer dollars on top of that, and yet the workers haven't seen one dime.
So it tells me there's money to be had, and which is why you organize. And the hope is you fight for this and you win. But, Josh, I appreciate you sharing some time with us,
sure,
sharing some thoughts. I wish you the best in this. Anything we can do here to help, let me know. One day stronger, one day longer, my brother.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think? Do you see all of this money that's going into the future not trickling down to the people who are actually making the money or the ones who are actually doing the work? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So as we've been talking about here, grad students organizing across the country. UE, the folks here, they've organized, 14,000 grad workers since January? I mean, that's doing the work, got to tell you. And I'm sitting here with one of them. Andrew Enum is a grad worker from Johns Hopkins University, here to support the striking workers at Web Tech. Andrew, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you here? Why'd you come from Johns Hopkins all the way up to Erie here? What brought you into town?
When we found out Local 506 and 618 were going on strike, we knew we had to be a part of it. We've just joined this union. We're the new kids on the block, and it's time for us to really show why we joined. show us that our values really are in line. That's why we joined UE. That's why they wanted to work with us and come up here and show solidarity with the union we're now part of building. You know, we're also here just to learn from this historic local that has so much to offer us and see what we're able to offer them and really take all those lessons back, because we're interested in building the type of militant union that they have here, back in Baltimore, back in Chicago, up in Boston, at MIT, you know, all of the different grad workers that are coming in. This is the kind of union we want to be a part of and want to build and grow to what it used to be.
Now, so do you have a union background? I mean, is this your first foray into it? Where are you at on that scale?
Yeah, so I didn't really know what unions were until I was like almost graduating college. And even then, I didn't really understand that I could be in one. I thought it was just like...
Let alone leading one.
Yeah, let alone being a union organizer, which I would become in grad school. So yeah, the first time I actually started doing union organizing was as a grad student. I sort of knew what they were before that. Didn't understand that like I was able to be in one as a grad student. I thought only some workplaces could have unions. I had no idea that there was a time when you just were in a union. That's a standard, and it should be.
And so, across industries. I mean, you go back into the 50s and 60s, there were unions for everything. Every type of worker had a voice and had contracts. It was different.
Yeah, it was definitely different. And I think I was sort of victim to the, you know, decline of the labor movement, and I just didn't even understand it. When I got to grad school, some of the more senior grad students were telling me, like, this is the project we're doing. We're trying to have a union, and sort of explained to me what it was. And, you know, it took me some time to actually learn. I went to reading some labor history and going to some forums to sort of understand it a little bit better. But, yeah, prior to becoming a union organizer, I had no background. My parents weren't in unions. My grandparents weren't in unions. They didn't even really know what it was. And so this sort of came solely off of,
you know. So what do they think about this?
They're supportive. They've actually, a little bit before we started our union card drive, my dad was visiting me in Baltimore and actually took him to a union meeting with me. And, you know, he leans over to me while we're talking about, you know, why we're fighting for a union. And he's like, hey, that sounds pretty good. Like, I kind of like your platform up there. And I was like, yeah, I feel like everyone should have this. And he was like, oh, yeah. And so.
So it's not only just educating students, it's educating their parents.
Yeah, it's a real opportunity to really get that message out there. But he really liked it. I've told him, like, you could also have a union. He works in tech. And so, you know, they tend to think they don't need them, but
no, they really need them.
They really need them, especially as the tech evolves. And so, yeah. And my mom,
everyone's replaced by AI.
Yeah, exactly. And my mom, on the other hand, is also working in tech now. And so the company she's working with also has sort of a up-and-coming union drive. And I'm just like, so when someone comes to you and talks to you about being involved in the union, you should sign up. Sign up immediately. So, yeah, it's been good. My parents are on board.
Yeah, you know, I love these stories because, you know, you get this sense of empowerment. I can feel it from you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm more confident in this than a lot of things that I've been a part of. Just knowing that, like, I'm fully bought in. This is the route to really rebuilding the kind of working conditions that people need, and really healing the divisions in the country. It's really going to be through the union movement and rebuilding it to what it once was and surpassing that.
You're right. So is this your first picket line? I mean, I know you're out walking the picket line today. Is that first experience there, or have you been on other lines before?
Yeah, so I was actually on the Temple grad student picket line in Philly back a couple months ago. So that was actually my first. It was actually the day I was going up to Princeton, also a UE affiliated local that had their car drive rally. And I was on my way up to Jersey and I was passing through Philly. So I stopped at the picket line and stayed there for about an hour and then picked someone up who was flying there to then go to Princeton for their own rally. So I've been all over. I've been traveling this whole region, really.
Well, that's incredible. No, it really is. And especially, you know, at someone your age, I mean, most young people, they're not into this. And this is why in this generation, I've got such great hope for your generation. I do. Because you seem to be getting it. And it's one of these things where I think, and maybe I'm wrong, but you look at maybe what happened to your parents, you look at what's been going on, you say, I'm not putting up with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the change that I want.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of people in my generation, and I'm sort of, my younger brothers may not fully remember this, but, you know, we saw the collapse of 08 and what it did to our families and to our parents, and it's just not something we're interested in repeating. And it's interesting, as I've been organizing, you know, I'm entering my fifth year at Hopkins, and every year as I talk to the incoming grad workers, it's becoming easier and easier to have this like union conversation with them. I'll bring it up, and initially they're sort of a little cagey about it. They don't know much about it. They're a little afraid. Now they come and ask me, "Hey, I heard you're the union guy. Let's what's that about? I want to know." So I'm hoping that's going to continue that trend this year. But it's seeming that people are just getting it. They don't need to be convinced that they deserve to have a voice, because I mean, we're not listened to. That applies sort of in a lot of ways. Young people are really getting active now, and not a lot's changing in the direction that it needs to go. And so I think it's time that young folk are really interested in taking back that power.
So what's your PhD in? And where are you planning career path?
Yeah, so I am getting a PhD in biophysics and biophysical chemistry.
Yeah, nothing I know anything about.
So
I'm not even going to pretend.
Yeah. So I'm in the School of Medicine. There's some potential medical applications, but, you know, I'm in a lab every day doing research that goes into grants to get more funding, could eventually lead to drug discovery, things like that. I think career path-wise, I'm actually thinking of shifting away from doing research. I'm looking into science policy, starting to shift the way in which we do science policy. Something that I'm passionate about is sort of taking the greed aspect out of it. A lot of what gets discovered at universities then goes to these big companies that then extort money from people to survive. And I'm interested in starting to shift that, where, you know, if you're taking public money, you shouldn't be able to make endless amounts of profit on producing a discovery that came from a government-funded lab. That's the kind of thing that I'm interested in starting to shift into, using the scientific, you know, expertise I'm going to have. This doesn't make sense. This isn't how science should be done. It shouldn't be driven by how you make the most money. It should be driven by what makes sense to get to the next step.
I love you, man. No, I mean, look, that's music to my ears, that the future can be bright. And that is a good thing. Last question I've got for you, for the folks here walking the picket line or on strike today, you got any words for them? Any encouragement, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm planning to go back out there now, and I'll tell them some of this myself. But yeah, I mean, the people out here are really showing what's possible when you have that rank and file democracy, that militant union that we all aspire to have. And I'm proud to be part of this union. I'm happy to be here supporting, and I'm looking forward to sort of applying all of this power and bringing this back to Baltimore and doing it ourselves and building a better UE and a better labor movement in the U.S. But all the people out there are really at the forefront of the labor movement right now, and it's showing. People are paying attention because it matters, and what they're doing is historic, as this local always does.
Good on you, man. Good on you, and good on your fellow union members there at Johns Hopkins. Wish you the best. Andrew, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, podcast, you know where to get it. I'll share it with your friends and neighbors, even the people that don't agree with me. Back after this. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. So back here in Erie, Pennsylvania, UE Local 506's Union Hall covering the UE strike. Now, you know, we talk about strikes from the workers' perspective. We talk about contracts. We talk about all of that stuff. But I don't think we're spending enough time on the political side of this. Right now in Washington, D.C., we've got, you know, at least the most pro-union president in my lifetime, if not, you know, one of the top two ever. And that's a good thing. But, you know, we still got workers out on the picket lines. We still got people who feel that they have to go out and strike because they're just not being heard. But the political side of this is really, really important. That's why I've asked Jim Wirtz to come sit down with us. Jim is the Erie County Democratic Party chair here locally. And, in fact, if you remember back when we were here back in October for the Working Class Heroes radio tour, Jim was the guy who put the entire Erie stop together. In fact, we made Jim a verb. If you needed something done, we were going to Wirtz it. That's why I've asked Jim to come sit down with us. Jim, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back. Pleasure.
It's great seeing you again. And look, you know, thanks for everything you did back in October. This was one of the best stops on the tour.
Great, great. Glad it all worked out.
So, again, here we're in this situation. You got workers out on the street. As we're talking to people, they didn't have an option. It's the last arrow in the quiver. What's the political side of this? You know, you hear enough from the worker side. What's the political side of this?
Look, I think, you know, you mentioned that we have the most labor-friendly, union-friendly president in your lifetime and certainly in my lifetime. I think when we look at the political spectrum right now, one party, not mine, is the one is consistently anti-union in all their approach. Certainly there are some members of the Republican caucus, but have some pro labor leanings, but they're increasingly in a shrinking minority, and so as we look across the political landscape, we're looking for people who are willing to even say the word union sometimes, and that's an unfortunate reality that we face. So candidates and elected officials who are willing to stand up and put themselves out there on behalf of working men and women are really to be treasured in this moment, especially as we're kind of, I think, as a society, rethinking what the labor movement means, rethinking what unionism means.
No, and we're seeing a lot more labor activity, a lot more strikes going on, a lot more organizing going on. And I've said for a very long time, the reality is, and you're very generous in your critique of the other side. I say all the time, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do, because I don't see any of them coming to the defense at this moment. Did they put on the comfortable shoes and start walking the picket line?
Well, I think there have been maybe one or two out here in campaign season this year. But in general, no. In general, you're not going to see those folks standing up for working people. At the same time, we have an incredibly pro-union Democratic caucus here in Pennsylvania. We've got an incredibly anti-union Republican caucus, and that fight is going to go to the bitter end. I think all of our local Republican elected officials here have come out in favor of right to work and voted consistently for right to work. And that's an abomination here in 2023 as we're thinking about what it takes to raise a family, what it takes for people to put the next meal on the table. And so they're not seeing their constituents. They're not hearing their constituents. They don't understand really what the needs are of Pennsylvanians generally, because this is an incredibly important time and really an opportunity for us to move working people forward and get a little further up the ladder.
And not just the workers. I mean, the entire community. I mean, as I'm talking to people here, this company is a part of the heart of this, the soul of this community. You know, as this company and these workers go, the community goes. So politically, you know, there's this part of me that goes, look, I've said it before, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. And as you've just said, you know, they push, you know, the whole no rights at work agenda. You would think, though, that they would want to get out there and say, hey, let's get back to the table. Let's be encouraging. Hey, let's treat these workers like the heroes in the essential workforce that they are. But it's crickets. And this is where the shoe leather meets the road, man.
You know, Republicans love to talk about economic development and all of these things. And in economic development, everybody likes to talk about the multiplier effect. But there is no greater multiplier effect in communities like ours than working people who are making a sustainable family supporting wage. And we see it from unions like UE 506 all the time. When these guys are out on the line and they're not collecting a paycheck, there's literally tens of thousands and ultimately millions of dollars over time that aren't going back into the community, into nonprofits, into little league groups, into the toy drives that they have, into the other things that they do to support community organizations. And without the unions that are here, regardless of what their affiliation is, regardless of what industry or trade they belong to, you see these guys show up time and time again for community initiatives. If they don't have their own security, if they're not taken care of for the work that they're doing, they're not going to be able to reciprocate that back out into the community and help take care of the folks that aren't there.
You know, this is one of those moments, though. This is, you know, the old labor frame. Which side are you on? You know, for me, this is one of those moments, and this is one of those moments that, you know, Democrats need to step to the forefront as well. You know, for the last at least year, I've been saying Democrats need to adopt a striker. There should be every politician who takes on a striking worker and walks with them, helps walk in their shoes, and really pushes the agenda forward, because this is how we're going to rebuild the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. Not with flowery words, not with pats on the back, but with actions.
That's right. There's a lot of rhetoric surrounding unionism and surrounding organizing right now. But the reality is that we do need more folks in the political sphere to step up and to be on the right side of labor. There's a conversation that happens in this community every time there's a major contract negotiation about, do these people make too much money? The cost of living is lower in Erie, PA, so why do they need to make $35 an hour? Well, that's not how we should measure anything. as you try to keep your head off the table with that statement, right? This is the fight that we have. Well, why as we're fighting to bring minimum wage workers up to a living wage, would we try to force highly skilled laborers back down to the minimum living wage possible? This is an opportunity where we need to really evaluate, the quality and the value of the products that are being produced, the skill of the work that these guys and women bring to the table, and ultimately at the end of the day, make sure that they're compensated, that the profits of this company and others make their way through the entire corporate food chain.
And the workers get what they earn. You know, I love people say, well, we deserve. No, you don't deserve it. You earn it. There's a huge difference there. Nobody gives you anything. You worked for it. You made that company profitable. Without you, there's nothing there.
And they work hard. They show up for overtime, whether they want to or not. They're there day in and day out, and they make sure that the products that are being pushed off the line are of the highest quality, so that those consumers, whether they're corporates or individuals, that those consumers are coming back time and time again. And that's the only way this relationship's going to work. Here in Erie, I mean, you have UE looking at the future of locomotive manufacturing and thinking about how to green this out and thinking about how to make it more efficient, more economic, and for the company to resist entering into that conversation because it's being started by the union, I think is a sign of the times and incredibly detrimental and disappointing.
I mean, the reality is, had the auto industry listened to the UAW back in the 60s, they probably wouldn't have the problems they have.
That's right.
You know, through the 90s, 2000s, and now. And this is where the people closest to the problem, maybe they're part of the solution. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, right? The folks, as you talk about the folks where the rubber meets the road, man, the people doing the job every day know where the line needs to go, so to speak. They know what's going to make their job more efficient, not somebody sitting in a cubicle or an office a couple hundred miles away. And so as we look at the current situation, the fact that these guys have to enter into a strike as part of the negotiation to get to a point where they have a real grievance structure, where they can articulate problems in the shop and on the floor and try to rectify them in a reasonable way, and the fact that they can't get to that part of the conversation with the company, I think is an incredibly telling sign of where we are as a corporate community.
Well, you know, as a society, I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, they want to be dictators.
Yeah.
You know, they want that. You know, I bring it up all the time. Pennsylvania's workers' compensation law still refers to the employer-employee relationship as master and servant. That's what corporate America wants. They want good little servants to do the work and then not share in the spoils. And a moment ago, you said, you know, $35 an hour. Some people say that's too much. I always ask the other side of this. Well, how much do you make? And that's probably not enough.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily. It's not necessarily producing the same thing, right? I mean, it's contributing to the product, but it's not producing the product. We need to look at this comprehensively. And you're right. There are people throughout the food chain. Before these guys went on strike, I had put out a press release issuing our support for UE 506 and 618 and talking about the fact that when these guys have a good contract, when their work is strong, everybody around them is equally strong. And the more that their wages are depressed, the more that they're working conditions are put into question, the more everybody's working conditions are going to be put into question, and the more everybody's wages are going to be suppressed. It is a line that these guys know that we need to hold, and I think the community understands that as well.
No, that is such an excellent point. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Jim Wirtz. He's the Erie County Democratic Party chair here in Erie, Pennsylvania. ErieDems.com, I think?
That's correct.
I hope folks will check out the website. Now, you know, what you just said there a moment ago is, I think, really important. When this place does well, when these workers do well, the community does well. You know, the dollar raise that they don't get is the dollar that isn't spent at Dombrowski's around the corner or the local hardware store. It's money that isn't reverberating through the local economy. And as you said, it hurts everyone all the way down the food chain, which is why, you know, in talking to people here, the community seems to be, you know, pretty solidly behind them.
They are, just as they were 4 years ago. I mean, the community understands the value of this institution in particular and the value of the workforce that's here supporting this institution. And I think as we get a little bit further down the road, that understanding will only grow, will only expand. You know, I think with the decline of unionism over the past 40 years, it kind of fell off of the front of people's minds. And so every once in a while, when we have a moment like this, where there is a tough negotiation, where there are folks out on strike, it's great to see the community rally behind them and to come back around to those traditional ideals that working folks drive this community forward. We saw it, ABSCUF saw it in 2016 when we were out on strike for a few days. These guys certainly saw it in 2019, and the community is coming back to rally for them again here in 2023.
It's good stuff. Now, I want to change a little bit over to the political side of this, because Erie, this area, you know, kind of the decider, if you will.
Sure.
How Erie goes, the state usually goes, and how Pennsylvania goes, national elections may go. Do you see this playing into some of that, perhaps? At some point, does the president, you know, make a mention of this? Do you see something along those lines?
Well, you know, we saw the lieutenant governor here last week showed up on the strike line, and I think and you're seeing other folks kind of issue statements of support. John Fetterman and Bob Casey just issued statements of support this past week. So I do think that as we go forward, you're going to continue to see that. I think where the folks that are interested in what's right will be out here, will show their support for these folks. And the guys that are trying to make a political calculation about how many of these rank-and-file guys are going to vote for them as opposed to somebody else, you know, they're making the wrong decision on this. And so I think by and large, politicians understand, and the ones who are willing to do right by their community are going to be out here and are going to make, at the very least, make statements in support.
One of my biggest knocks of President Obama was, you know, he made the comment, "I'm going to get comfortable shoes and you know, walk the picket line." Never found those comfortable shoes.
Yeah.
And you know, I look at Jelly Bucket Joe, man, he's out there doing the work, rebuilding. You know, Builder Biden is doing the work.
That's right.
And I just wish we would do a little bit more, you know, pointing that out.
A little more celebration of it. I know, you know, sometimes it's hard to cut through the noise. There's a lot of noise around the administration, around just what's happening generally in the Republican caucuses and in the Republican Party.
Oh, you mean the clown show over there?
The anti-democratic clown show. I mean, it's anti-democratic small d. Forget that they hate us. They seem to hate everyone. And so here we are headstrong into a presidential election year, and it's very difficult to get folks, not only in mainstream media, but even around the dinner table, to talk about the successes that we're seeing under this administration. I mean, the blows that were handed down by the Supreme Court yesterday, I think this administration will be creative enough to see how they can help to reconcile that and make sure that everybody is afloat, not only for the next election year, but heading forward into the future. This is the first administration I can think of in a long time that is making big plays, long-term plays that are going to have reverberating effects for my kids' generation and maybe even for their kids.
No, it's transformational. I mean, some of the, you know, I talk about this all the time, the fact that we're moving away from the supply-side voodoo Reaganomic neoliberal model towards reshoring manufacturing and investing in infrastructure and doing the things that we need to be doing at home, that is huge. And that's why I brought the administration up here, because you mentioned a second ago the potential of bringing on green technologies, you know, electric locomotives, the future of transportation, and to have it done here. This seems to be kind of a perfect a perfect storm scenario where you've got the administration pushing this stuff, you got the workers here pushing for that stuff. The only problem is you got a company that not so much.
Yeah, it's hard to know what's in their thought process, what's in their business model and their forecasting that prohibits them from getting on board, pun fully intended, on this idea, right? I mean, across the world, people are clamoring for alternative fuel locomotives, alternative fuel cars. I mean, we're in a position here in Erie, PA, to really lead that transformation, and not just for this industry, by the way. I mean, I think there's a number of industries where Erie is well situated to be the center point if people can just start to look at that big picture and really just enter into the conversations with folks that want to help do the work and want to help move it forward.
Well, as I said, Erie's like the pulse. However this area goes, the state kind of goes. So you keep up the good work and moving, ushering people in the right direction.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I appreciate the time, Jim. Thanks so much. Jim Wirtz, he is the chairman of the Erie County Democratic Party. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break back here from Erie, Pennsylvania. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. So as we spend some time here in Erie on the UE WabTech picket line, run into a bunch of people who are doing great work, you know, people who aren't UE members, folks who are saying, you know, this is important, I want to be part of it. And, you know, look, UE has done an incredible job since January of organizing graduate student workers across the country, some 14,000 members they have added as graduate workers, and one of them decided, hey, I'm going to come down here and I'm going to be participating in this. That's why I've asked Jacob Ranking to come sit with us. He's a grad worker at Northwestern University, part of their union. Jacob, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely.
So let me, the first question out of the bag, why'd you come? Why are you here?
Honestly, to experience a picket and to learn more about the UE family, where we joined UE last year. We voted to unionize in January. I haven't personally had a lot of contact with other locals. This was a great chance to kind of learn what the struggle's about at one of the oldest locals there is.
Is this your first picket line?
Yes, it is.
What's it been like?
It's been fantastic. Everyone's been very kind. There's been huge organization everywhere, and it's a fantastic feeling to see how everyone is completely united around the issues that they're fighting for, but also about, around the issues that we're facing as a nation and as working class everywhere.
It really is a unique feeling, isn't it? I mean, I've been on hundreds of picket lines, and every time you're there, it's that, just what you said, it's that sense of community, that sense of solidarity that you can feel in the air.
Yeah, you just don't have any kind of feeling of people are having disagreements or anything. Everyone is completely united. Everyone's taking care of everyone else. There's this huge solidarity that I got when we were organizing the union and going through the election and everything, but it's just so much more present here.
No, it's like I've said, you know, thousands of times on this show, we got to take off the red hats and the blue hat, put on a hard hat, and we can rebuild anything. And when we unionize people, we bring people together in the workplace, we can reunite this country in ways that we haven't done in a very long time. So, you know, look, you as a graduate worker moving in a direction to say, look, you know, my work matters. We should be compensated fairly. Tell me about the experience of going through that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in a second year program. I'm in the hard sciences, so I'm in lab every day. And the amount of just dangerous materials and dangerous conditions that we're exposed to in the hard sciences is unbelievable. At the same time, I talk to friends in the humanities, and the amount of just exploitation that they're getting is unbelievable. And so it makes a lot of sense for us to unionize. It makes a lot of sense for us to be doing this organizing ourselves and for us to decide what our structure is going to be, where UE is just a fantastic fit for us. But honestly, especially through the pandemic, when we in the hard sciences, we got maybe 3 weeks before we were forced back into lab as essential workers. My office, there's seven of us in there. Northwestern said it's safe for one person to be in there at any given time. So there's just this kind of disregard for our own safety, for our own work-life balance that we have to unionize to actually get our opinions through.
Now, what do you say to the people who go, you know, but Jacob, you know, in the past, people had to put up with this stuff. You're just paying your dues.
Yeah, I mean, that's an argument to make, but I think it's not a very good one because in the past things were bad doesn't mean I also have to go through all these terrible conditions and be treated like crap, honestly.
No, I'm right there with you. So, you know, for me, the exciting part of seeing graduate workers unionized is these are young people. These are people who are taking the initiative to say, look, we're not putting up with this garbage anymore. We want better. We earn better. We do better. And you guys are going to move on to other careers down the line and take this experience with you. So for me, that's the exciting part because we're rediscovering solidarity.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's so much we learned. There's also just fantastic at every university that's been on strike. Our experience around unionizing has been we talk to the undergrads. The undergrads are more than just happy to learn about unionization. They're really excited for us. The solidarity we get from undergraduate students who have no skin in the game, really, is fantastic. And they're also going to move on and go into industry, go into jobs, and have that experience, have learned about unionization, not from who they should have learned it from, but from fellow students.
No, that is fabulous stuff. So what's the message for the folks on strike here? What message do you bring from Northwestern? What message from your background is, as you've seen, that you've been on the picket line, you got any words for them?
Oh, we're right there with you, and we're going to be here every time you need us. Anything you need, reach out to us. We'll be there because you all have helped us in our fight to unionize. You're there with us. You're helping us along the way. You're giving us all this infrastructure, all this support. We have to return that because that's what solidarity is.
Jacob, outstanding stuff. It was really great seeing you, great meeting you. I wish you the best. Thanks for taking some time for us.
Thank you so much.
Good stuff, Jacob Ranke, graduate worker at Northwestern University. We'll take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. Stick around. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So here in Erie, Pennsylvania, talking about this strike, again, you know, as we've been talking to people, the general consensus is nobody knows why it's going on. Asking for things that are out of bounds, it just seems like, well, the company may have overshot their hand. But here to share some thoughts on the history here and also where we are right now, I've asked Al Hart to come talk with us. Al is a retired GE worker, also UE staffer. I understand WebTech was GE before. This is the plant, the history here, long, long history of militant labor here. So Al is a wealth of information. Al, I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Thanks for putting me on.
So let's start with, what do you think about what's going on right now?
Well, I'm very happy with it. I don't live in Erie anymore. I live in Pittsburgh. I was just summing up what you said. I started out as a worker here 50 years ago, worked in this plant for 13 years, active in this local, was on the executive board of this local. Then I went on the UE staff. I was a field rep for 20 years, and then I was editor of the UE News for 11 years, and I retired in 2017. So I got a long history with this union. I have a long history with this local. And when I was coming up as a 20-something in the 1970s in this local, there were people around still in the leadership who had helped this local survive the McCarthy era.
Right.
This union, UE, and this local in particular, were big targets of the Red Scare in the 1950s. We had a rival union, the IUE, that was created to destroy UE. And they succeeded in many places. They never succeeded here. This is actually the biggest local of UE that didn't succumb to the Red Scare and the raiding by other unions. And it's an interesting story. A friend of mine actually wrote a book a few years ago about the history. It's very insightful. But anyway, this local has fantastic traditions. They've, you know, they've been militant. I mean, I was very proud to be part of this local when I was here, and I'm still very proud to be part of it. And I'm very proud to see, you know, in 2023, when supposedly young workers don't get it anymore, they don't understand what unions are for, they don't appreciate it, these folks here are completely upholding the traditions of this local. And as someone in my 70s who's been in this union for a long time, but also as someone who as a young person knew the generation before us, the generation that started this local and they kept this local alive under fire, it means a lot to me to see what these folks are doing right now.
Yeah, the transition, the changing of the guard, and still is militant. You know, one of the things I said, you know, we were here back in October, and this local, probably one of the most militant locals in the entire country, not just UE, but all the unions. And I got that sense and that feel here multiple times. And so this is not surprising to me to see where they are.
Well, one of the things they're fighting for, which we had, all GE workers in UE and in several other unions had for the 80-some years, was under the contract, if after the third step of the grievance procedure, we had the option of going on strike over a grievance. And we did it. We didn't do it all the time, but we did it enough times to get the message across. And my experience when I worked here, when we would have a grievance strike, maybe a one-day grievance strike, sometimes less than a whole full day, sometimes, you know, a four-day weekend. But for the next year, at least, sometimes longer, the company would be much more reasonable about grievances.
No, and this is the thing,
and it's a powerful weapon to have.
Absolutely, and you know, you hit on something that made me think of the old timer that put me under his wing and said, "Hey, we're going to make a Teamster out of you." Yet, he said, you know, back in the '50s, you know, they used to go on strike every 5 to 6 years just because you're building that kind of militancy, that kind of solidarity that says, hey, we fought and won something. And you're not going to trade something that you fought for away for something for something meager. You're going to keep fighting, and once you get that, it's contagious. So I think we're kind of seeing that moment. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know that I'm not in that plant anymore. I haven't been in that plant since 1986. But I know enough about that plant and what I'm hearing from the people today, you know, and it's not the same plant. We had 15,000 members in this local in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
We now have 1,400. So it's not as big, but it's still here. Given what's happened to the industrial working class in the United States, it's amazing that it's still here. Given what's happened to the industrial working class in Erie, because I drive around Erie. Every time I drive around Erie, as someone who hasn't lived here since the 80s, I get depressed. Because when I left here, and what's still in my mind as the image of Erie is factory after factory after factory, almost all of them unionized.
Yep.
People in this plant used to joke, people of my generation, we were the 20-somethings, we were the young rebels, if the company fires me or if I quit, I'll have a new job by the afternoon.
Yep.
And by new job, we meant a new union job.
Right.
That's not the case today. There's hardly anything left in Erie. Erie's a very depressed community, and this is the place where there's good-paying jobs with a union, but actually, but besides that, with a very militant union.
Yeah,
a union in name only.
No, look, I grew up in Cleveland, and it was the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, there was manufacturing everywhere. You know, last October, we did the Working Class Heroes radio tour that brought us through here, and we went to a lot of places that used to be.
Yeah.
You know, Akron used to be the rubber capital. Toledo used to be the glass capital. You go across,
exactly.
You know, Wisconsin, you know, Appleton, Wisconsin paper. You could go to all these places. This was the heart and soul of those communities that have been eviscerated. And fortunately, you've been able to hold on to this and not lose your soul in the whole process.
Well, what impresses me about what's happening right now with this strike is when I was a young person, a young worker in this plant in the 1970s, it was easy to be militant because we had all kinds of fallbacks.
Right.
What I was just saying about other jobs being available. These workers don't have that, and they're fighting anyway. So in a way, they're outdoing my generation by quite a bit because we didn't have to fight under these conditions. Like, you got the only good job in town. Are you going to risk it? Well, yeah, we're going to risk it to keep it from becoming a shitty job. And that's necessary. And these folks are doing it, and I couldn't be more proud of my local.
So, you know, I look at this, and because what caught my attention, you were saying earlier that, you know, you're so proud of these younger people, and, you know, that, you know, again, you don't often hear this. You don't hear it from an old timer. Most of the time you get that curmudgeon, you know, in my day, you know, we were so much better than this.
You punks don't get it, you know, and they do get it.
And that's what I'm saying. That's important.
Yeah.
So, you know, in looking at what's going on here, you know, with where they are, where do you see this going? I mean, with your wealth of experience, the years that you've lived here, you've worked here, you've done all this stuff. What do you see?
Well, I think I know where the union's at. I'm pretty sure I know where the union's at. What I don't know is where this company's head is at. They don't seem very smart. I mean, this local struck them 4 years ago. You've probably reported this to your listeners when they bought the place and they tried to gut the GE, what was it, the conditions of the GE contract, and this local fought back and largely succeeded. But they didn't learn a damn thing from that. So in the history of this local union, I mean, besides the grievance strikes, which we're very proud of what we did with the right to strike for grievances, and we want to get it back, but to strike for a contract, in the history of this local, it only happened twice with General Electric. 1946, which was a national strike of all GE workers, and 1969, which was a national strike of a coalition of unions, because UE no longer represented everybody in GE. The union situation in GE was fractured.
Right.
But by 1969, in spite of all the bad blood of the 1950s, we got all the unions together. The unions that tried to destroy us were on the same side. And this is before I worked here, but I'm saying we collectively as a UE guy beat the company. And the whole time I worked for GE, we never had to go on strike for a contract because we were we were riding on the coattails of what people did in 1969. So General Electric had two contract strikes in 80 years. Wabtec comes in here, and in 4 years, they're on their second strike already. Something is wrong with these people. They're not very smart, I think. So I don't know what's going to happen because I don't know what's in their heads.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I was looking at the profit numbers. They're extraordinarily profitable. In fact, they're doing the stock buyback things. So, again, if you're going to buy back stocks and say, hey, we've got no productive use for this money, how about sharing it with the people who earn it?
Exactly. Which is, and, you know, I've never dealt with this company. I mean, not here. I've never dealt with this company at all as far as Wabtec. I have some knowledge of Wabco, which was their predecessor company, but not here, you know, in Pittsburgh. But, they seem to be very arrogant and not, you know, not, and they, what
well,
I hear.
I mean, look, you got decades of corporate America getting their way. Of course they're going to be arrogant.
And, but what they really seem to go out of their way to disrespect the workers here. I mean, they sent this letter out telling people, fill out this form to resign from the union. No one sent them in. Nobody resigned from the union. They actually seem to believe their own bullshit. If they tell people, if they make some threats, and then they tell people, we would like you to quit the union and come and be a scab, that people are going to do it. And it didn't work. And I got the impression from what people told me that the company was shocked that the members rejected their final offer. I wasn't shocked at all. I would have been shocked I would have been shocked if it even had been close, which it wasn't.
Right.
So they really don't seem to have the pulse of their employees.
So what message for the workers here? As an old timer?
Keep up the good work. You're doing it right. I'm proud of you. People of my age group are proud of you. People that of the generation I learned from, if they were here, and they're not, they would be very proud of you. So keep it up.
Good stuff. Al, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts with us.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Good stuff. Thank you, Al. Al Hart, UE retiree, UE staff retiree. I want to hear your thoughts. What do you think of that? You know, proud of the younger generation. You don't hear that from older guys so much. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much, Al. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show. Like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at therickSmithShow.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. One of the things I love about being on picket lines is you run across people who, you know, you may not otherwise meet. Today, you know, one of those days, all across the country, people have come to this picket line to show solidarity with these UE workers, with these web tech workers, and saying, hey, look, you know, we're going to stand behind you. And one of those folks is Vele Agarwal. He is a grad worker from the University of Chicago. They have organized, and he's come all the way from Chicago here to Erie to show a little solidarity. Vele, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So what brought you here? What made you go, hey, I want to get up and I want to go from Chicago to Erie?
So at University of Chicago, we are also a UE local, and we are gearing up for a contract fight. We just started our negotiations. And I came here to learn about, you know, the history of UE local, that, you know, one of the oldest local here, and learning how they fight for a contract, how they make, you know, implement a rank and file control with unit as large as 1,400 people. We are 3,000, but it's, you know, it's as big as I could find. And, you know, learning the ideas of, you know, how does democracy work in this sort of situation? How do you actually get power from there? And, I mean, it's also just a great learning experience because I haven't been in a strike before, and I got to learn firsthand on how strikes are run, how strikes actually look on the picket lines, how it looks like in, you know, leadership rooms. And
so you're actually in with the leaders, you know, as they're making the decisions and as they're planning this all out, to maybe take back with you.
Yeah. I mean, their ideas and you know, their guiding principles. I mean, yes, we have, you know, UE staff that supports us, but also when you talk to other workers who have been doing this for so long, there are differences differences of what an advice is and what works on the ground and how you actually execute it, and just the fact that you are the one who's living with it.
Yeah, the leadership part of it, sure.
Yeah.
That's incredible. You know, is this your first picket line?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Any thoughts?
I mean, pickets are fun. I mean, I came in thinking that maybe there'll be stand up with the police or something. But just, you know, walking around, being in solidarity, having fun at picket is just a great way to, well, I mean,
to be part of something. No, look, at the end of it, you know, as I've said, you know, this is rediscovering solidarity, or discovering solidarity for the first time, understanding that, you know, there's something bigger than just the individual that we're not here in this country. We're not supposed to believe in.
Yeah.
So you're from India, right?
Yes.
In your home country, were you active in labor there? You know, what made you become active in the labor movement here?
So not so much in India. So I did my high school, wasn't very involved in labor movement because I was focusing on my high school and undergrad education. And then right after finishing my undergrad education, I came to U.S., you know, didn't take a year off or month off, came to U.S. directly. So my stay in India has been purely, you know, just reading and working towards my degree. So I didn't have, you know, a chance to work as a, you know, I wasn't working anywhere and so on. And when I came to US for PhD, I came here just for getting a degree. But I think just the working conditions at University of Chicago, I see for myself and so many of my coworkers that, you know, low pay, people are on food stamps while being a grad worker, people having to delay their families, not being able to take care of their teeth, high copay in medical insurances, and so on. And, you know, rampant PI abuse, you know, abuse from their supervisors.
Yeah.
And all of this is, you know, it sort of spoils the experience that you're, you know, that is romanticized towards getting a PhD in, you know, and in academia, the world of PhD is romanticized as this, oh, great learning experience, and where you get to discover and, you know, settle your curiosities. And it's just not there, you know, with
It's hard, kind of hard to do, you know, this great stuff when you're hungry.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard when you can't keep a roof over your head. It's kind of hard when, you know, as you pointed out, your teeth are falling out.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. And all of this sort of, you know, there are issues there. And it's just, you know, one day my a coworker came to my lab and said, hey, I mean, wasn't a co I didn't know them before, but they were like, oh, I also work in the building next to you. And, you know, what are your issues and what do you think, you know, what are the some of the ways that can be resolved and how do you want to resolve it? And so, you know, they came to me, they talked to me about how there is a organizing effort at the campus and asked me to get involved and so on. And that sort of, you know, started with me off with this organizing drive. You know, I took up the positions of communications chair in my union. Now we, you know, led the charge of communications throughout the last year, and we won our election last year about 92%.
So you went from not really knowing much about labor, coming to this country, not knowing anything about U.S. labor, to now being one of the leaders in one of a sizable local.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Thanks.
No, I mean, it really is. I mean, it's an incredible story that I wish, you know, I wish we could replicate a million times more. Mm-hmm. Because this is, again, this idea that we can change things, this empowerment that you clearly feel is contagious, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I will at least I try to, and, you know, when I try to organize my fellow international workers, specifically from India and, you know, China, this is, you know, a lot of people are just, you know, I'm here to work on my PhD. University of Chicago is like 40% international, or at least our unit is, you know, 40% international workers who just come here for their PhD and probably will leave at least the university, if not the country or and Illinois. But
but I want them taking that back with them. I want them taking that sense of empowerment back with them and making change wherever.
Yeah, and so, I mean, this idea that you're here for 5 years is sometimes portrayed as don't get involved with unionizing, just work on your degree, face a little abuse, it's fine, it's going to blow over, and then it's life going to be fine. And but a lot of time, you know, you see people lose interest in academia because of the situation, working conditions, you know.
Yeah.
I see, you know, non-tenure track faculty who are, like, treated poorly, even though they are unionized. You know, other tenure track faculties, they're treated poorly. And so this whole state of academia where it's like, oh, if you want to be in academia, you have to suffer for 40 years until you become a burnout or you become a hotshot where you can abuse others and become the head admin of the university. And so
those are two ways you can go.
Yeah. And so there is this, you know, degradation of at least the education, higher education that is advertised in other countries that, oh, U.S. is great for education, higher education, you know, to get a postdoc, graduate degree, but it's just, you know, a little underwhelming when I came here, and it's like, well, I have to stay here 5 years, so might as well change this.
No, you've taken to it, and it sounds like you're in the process of changing the world. Last question I've got for you. What do you say to the folks here that you walked the picket line with today? What's the message for them? What do you want them to know?
Oh, I mean, we are a relatively nascent, an infant union, and there isn't a lot that our union can give for you, but
the fact that you're here is more than anything you can give. The fact that you're standing shoulder to shoulder with these guys and these women, that's it. Yeah.
And I mean, one thing that I will say is, like, graduate school, it's more young people and, you know, 20s, 30s, people in their 20s, 30s as compared to maybe 50s in this plant. And we can say that the torch is being carried forward. We have 3,000 at UChicago, 3,000 at Northwestern, about 20,000 all over the country who are ready to carry this, you know, rank and file worker rights movement forward from, you know, since whenever. Yeah. And we are really excited about it. And we'll be here. We'll support them in whatever way they can. But rest assured, the fight is going to continue.
Well, you're doing a great job. I love the work that you're doing, and I appreciate you sitting down with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Valle Agarwal. He is a grad worker at the University of Chicago and a UE member. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this, the crowd.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Hope you've enjoyed our day in Erie. And look, the stories of people who, I got to tell you, I think are heroes. These are the folks who are fighting for the future of a prosperous working class, fighting for what used to be that American dream of one income, being able to support a family, getting health care that is worth having, having something of a retirement down the road after decades of hard work and dedication and loyalty to these companies. This is the stuff we should be fighting for. Not just as the workers who benefit from it, but as the communities that these factories and these workers are in and these jobs are in. We should be fighting to make sure all jobs are family-sustaining wage jobs with all of the things that our grandparents' generation fought for. Look, you know, we used to be able to get by on one income. A family could get by, could survive, could do well, could thrive on one income. And then, hey, you know, well, you know, we're going to try this new gimmicky thing, crush unions, give tax breaks to rich people, outsource jobs. And then you needed two incomes. Magically, mom had to go to work because they needed to. It wasn't like my grandparents who, you know, my grandfather went off to work. My grandmother stayed home, raised the children. And then once they got to a certain age, went into the workforce for extra money, for retirement, for whatever that was. And then, you know, my parents' age generation, they needed both incomes. And now it's a standard. Got to have it. In fact, you know, they're saying now you might need three incomes, which, again, why are we seeing states like Iowa pursuing child labor law changes, massive child labor law changes? Because even they know you need three incomes in this day and age to get by. Three incomes. This is what we've done to the American dream. This is what we've done to the economy. This is what we've done to communities. And I tell you, we can do better. We can do much better. And good on these workers and good on this community in Erie for saying, you know what? We demand better. I hope it spreads. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any of today's program, grab the podcast. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.